This is the Observations Podcast for Sunday, the 19th of January, 2025, the day before the inauguration. Welcome to the podcast. I'm Dale Franks.
I'm Michael Wade, and welcome to our top-notch, well-run, and produced studios here at QNO.net.
Okay, well, QNO.net doesn't exist anymore. However, no one knows what happened before the camera went live. So as far as they know, this is a professional television production and everything is just going along swimmingly.
That's true. So, we got Jim in the back. He's going to bring out some monkeys and some llamas.
Everything is going just fine. And we are live and we're ready to rock and roll. So now I'm on the West Coast. So things that happen, you know, aren't immediately obvious to me until hours after everyone else has seen them. So whenever I, you know, 8:30 or 9-ish, whenever I happen to be able to look at some social media thing, I'm already a couple of hours behind the curveball. I don't realize what's going on. And so imagine my shock whenever I got up on Friday morning and I popped open X and I saw this tweet popping up about 1,000 times in my timeline. President Biden declaring the Equal Rights Amendment is now the law of the land. I got a copy of the Constitution around here somewhere, one of those little red Cato Institute copies of it. I usually keep it right here on my desk. I must have moved it. It's probably over on my second desk. But in any event, it doesn't matter because I know what it says about amending the Constitution. And there's one guy the Constitution doesn't mention in the amendment process, and that's the President of the United States.
Yeah, and doing it via Twitter, I mean, that's the PS de la resistance. yeah, I'm just going to amend the Constitution with my Twitter account.
Well, the weird thing is that last month, just before Christmas, actually, literally, like a month to the day prior to Biden coming out with this tweet, which he did later follow up on with an official release from the White House saying basically the same thing. It's like, I declare it the law. I affirm it the law. But back on December...
Huzzah.
Yeah, huzzah. But back on December 17th, the National Archivist said, no, it's not the law of the land. I can't enroll it in the Constitution because it didn't pass... ratification.
It's a dead letter.
And the Supreme Court said it didn't pass ratification. It was not ratified by either the 1979 initial deadline or the 1982 deadline after
the
Congress.
Dubious 1982 deadline.
Yeah, even then, after Congress extended it for 3 years. Moreover, after 1982, a couple of states that had previously ratified it deratified
withdrawal.
It.
Withdrawal, yeah.
So, no, it's not the law of the land. Now, she also cited, the National Archivist also cited Merrick Garland's Justice Department back in 22 saying, yeah, it's a dead letter. It didn't pass. It didn't get ratified. Okay, so now on Friday, 72 hours left in his term, Joe Biden, and look, let's not kid ourselves. What, Joe Biden probably... didn't even know that this happened. Someone using Joe Biden's Twitter account just said, hey, it's the law of the land. And while some other...
That's how this works now, right?
Yeah, just the president declares things. But while some other news services were a little kinder to Joe Biden, one that was not was Reuters, who just flat out said, Joe Biden declares it's the law. It isn't. And I guess my question is, well, first my question is, what? And then after I had a few minutes to think about it, my question was, why? I mean, you're not even going to look. You're not even going to be president in 72 more hours. They're literally pulling your photograph off the wall at all of the executive agencies. What's the purpose of this statement now?
This is basically throwing spike strips in front of the presidential cavalcade from Congress down to White House on Inauguration Day. It's supposed to create a bump in the road for Trump, and then the Democrats will scream about how he's taking away women's rights. I mean, it's, you know, it's the Pelosi, I forget what you call it, but you know, it's the Pelosi denominated play where they just throw mud at the wall and at, you know, a particular person, hype it up, pass it off to the news agencies. The news agencies then run with it and put their gloss on it. It's nothing more than a distraction.
I did note that several Democrats, senators and whatnot, did jump in and start saying, "Isn't this wonderful? Joe Biden has done this." Oh, by the way, I guess we have to take a look at this. This came in the thank you, chat, for reminding me that this exists, because this is basically this is basically what happened on Friday. But
this is, are you kidding me? It's like the last 4 years.
Look, but here's something that's troubling. Georgetown Law, the law school at Georgetown University, released a press release congratulating one of their professors who's been working tirelessly from Georgetown to have the Equal Rights Amendment recognized, and they were congratulating her. Okay, this is not, you know, a crazy old man who isn't going to be president anymore because everybody realized he was a crazy old man. This is Georgetown Law School. Kristen Gillibrand came out and patted Joe Biden on the back for making this declaration. The American Bar Association released a press release saying, well, there we go. It's the law of the land now. This is not just confined to Joe Biden. This is, I mean, ABA is kind of an institution, right? I mean, prior to at least Trump, that's who we looked to tell us what judges were qualified whenever they were going to be nominated. Now the ABA is
used to. We don't do it anymore, but
yeah. But now the ABA has just decided. Well, it's just another example of institutions that have died, and yet progressives wear their, you know, dead skin as a suit.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, no. Again, it's all meant to be a distraction to get Trump off his agenda. It's meant to put obstacles in his way that he has to clear before getting to what he really wants to do. Now, is there much that he... I mean, he doesn't really have to do anything. I mean, it's not the law of the land. It's not going to be archived. It's not going to become part of the law.
Yeah, I don't even know why he would have to address it.
Sort of a stupid ploy, but they do want the opportunity to say that Trump is violating women's rights. I mean, that's all this really is.
To make that work, what Biden should have done then is order the National Archivist, who he did appoint, to enroll it and see if she would do it.
Yeah, but they can't. They know what their job is.
Yeah, and a month ago, the National Archivist already said, no, it's not. But of course, the argument that we're hearing from Democrats is, well, hey, wait a second. The archivist doesn't make this decision. Her job is purely ministerial. It's just right. A little T crossing and I dotting to, you know, put all the...
Well, if we're going to talk about T crossing and I dotting, let's take a look at the amendment itself. Huh. It says right in there, oh, you had this many years. Okay, it's done.
Yeah, so I mean, the fact that, and I think there were a couple of states that in the late 80s and early 90s, in fact, there was a state as late as 2014, if I recall, who came in and said, hey, we're going to ratify this bad boy.
Yeah, Virginia did it in 2020 under Ralph Northam. And I think it was like Wisconsin or Minnesota or somebody did it late as well. Maybe it was Michigan. I can't remember.
Okay, well, congratulations, Virginia. You were 38 years too late.
It's all pointless exercise. And the thing is that I don't think the feminists would want that particular... if you actually read the amendment, then you're talking about getting rid of any kind of sexually based laws, period. Title IX goes out the window, right? Because this is the Constitution we're talking about.
That's
there's
right.
No that preference-based would... hiring. There's no preference-based payments. People don't maybe know this, but women are actually charged the same as men for insurance premiums, even though they live longer and a lot longer in many cases. And when insurance companies tried to use that actuarial information, they got sued. I believe it was up in Massachusetts. And that was the end of that. That no longer can happen.
There was a significant argument back in the 70s and early 80s that the ERA was simply not needed because the 14th Amendment exists.
Right. I've made that argument many times.
So if the 14th Amendment exists, this is just extra unnecessary verbiage in the Constitution, because the 14th says that all, you know, everybody who is a citizen gets treated like everybody else who's a citizen. So,
right. Well, we see how that works out, but
yeah, well, but yes. You know, still,
but at the same time, look, I don't mind women getting some preference in the way that their lives are lived, because they do have different lives than men. Yes, they get to live longer, but they're also subject to more dangerous things. So, I mean, I don't see the problem. I never liked Title IX, but I do like the idea that women's sports get some, you know, a little boost. I think that's okay.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, there are problems with Title IX, certainly in the rules that both the Obama and the Biden administration tried to, you know, cram down everybody's throat, especially, you know, Biden when it came to the trans stuff. Okay, fine. It gives the government too much of a finger on the scale via regulation, although absent Chevron, maybe it doesn't anymore.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. I don't think we've realized how important the overturning of Chevron really is yet.
We haven't seen
it. Exactly right.
Yeah, we haven't seen a lot of fallout from that. But
no, not yet.
But, you know, and here's the thing. And the LA fires are probably going to be a good test of that, because there are any number of EPA rules that are going to get thrown up as roadblocks to anybody who wants to rebuild their house, even in the same footprint where it used to exist. And for debris clearing and all of that, those aren't in the EPA legislation. Those aren't ever passed by Congress. So, you know, if they become roadblocks to building houses, now look, there's going to be California Coastal Commission and a whole bunch of other roadblocks that get thrown up to that prior to any of the federal ones. But if any of those federal regulations are seen as standing in the way, I just don't know why LA homeowner or a class action group of LA homeowners can't treaty chart right into federal court and have them take a look at those regs.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, the California laws themselves are onerous enough, but you could get the EPA out and then put some more force on the governor and the mayor and the local planning commission, with, since they wouldn't have the cover of the federal government to say, well, you know, we can only do so much.
Yeah, exactly. Pull the feds out. I mean, as far as a legal strategy goes, and again, I am not a lawyer, but as far as a legal strategy goes, that sounds like a pretty good one to me. Okay. If they're going to use any of the EPA regs as a basis for what they're doing, well, let's get rid of those EPA regs. And then it becomes California's fault entirely. And from what I can tell so far, the city and county of Los Angeles and the state of the California and the state of California are doing everything they can to ensure that someone else is getting blamed for whatever goes on.
Yeah. Well, and then they're stepping all over themselves. I'm sure you saw that it was like the health department or something like that that sent out this missive about you cannot go to the remains until they've been inspected.
Yeah, that's right.
Too dangerous to go back into your neighborhood. Shuffling around in there and you can't do anything.
Yeah, there may be hazardous materials. So, yeah, you cannot go back and see the side of your home. Because
and what it, the other thing was Gavin Newsom put a moratorium on anybody buying unsolicited offers. That's what it was. Unsolicited offers to buy the land that's left. If it wasn't at fair market value before the fires happened, which makes that land unsaleable.
Here's the thing. This is where, you know, this is where it gets so super complicated. And I have no answer for this. But the idea, of course, is that someone like, you know, some big developer, you know, Rick Caruso, who might come along and say, I want to buy your land in Pacific Palisades because I you know, whatever it is that he wants to put up there, who knows. And you probably don't have fire insurance other than the crappy California version of it. It will never pay you anything near the replacement value of your home. Your private insurance company is probably going to nope themselves out of it. So if you want to rebuild that house, it's going to come out of your pocket. Or
entirely. Yeah.
Or your $1.7 million property, just pulling a number off the top of my head, without a house, it's not worth 1.7, but I might give you 1.2 or 1.3.
Yeah. I mean, you can actually still extract some value out of that.
You know, and look, it's not Rick Caruso. It's the Black Rocks and, you know, the other, you know.
Sure. Okay.
Major funds that they're.
But why does the state have to step in?
Well, but see, I here. Mean, yeah, but see, again, this is to try to. I don't know. I guess the idea is try to protect homeowners, but wait a second. If I don't have insurance, I'm not going to get the full replacement value of my home. And it's going to cost me, you know, $1 million to replace it. And I don't have the $1 million.
Oh, easily.
Plus, I'm also still in an old mortgage for, you know, still with 400 or 500,000 left on it. I might get just enough from insurance to get me out from under that mortgage and to get me free and clear. But now I got to come up with a, you know, a mill to rebuild it because, you know, who's going to pay me the money to do that? Who's being helped here? Surely the developer is being prevented from making an offer, get it, but who's getting helped by preventing the developers from doing that? And at the same time, do we really want you know, big funds like BlackRock or Vanguard coming in and just buying up huge swathes of these neighborhoods to do whatever it is that they're gonna do with it. This all gets super complicated super quick, and I'm not sure that Gavin Newsom sitting up in Sacramento has this figured out.
Well, we know he doesn't have it figured out. He doesn't have anything figured out. But you're absolutely right. I also think it violates the Constitution in that the states are prevented from impairing the obligations of contract. So that looks like exactly what this is. And again, who do they think they're helping?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, yeah, who's the beneficiary of that rule?
Yeah, I don't even know.
And by the way,
I mean, I'd rather sell something that I can get something for and maybe get out from under an obligation than be left with something that's useless.
Yeah. And by the way, LA County doesn't want those houses rebuilt because they're just going to burn down again. Oh, yeah. LA County, the problem with having these nice little foothills communities is that we know they're going to burn down if there's a wildfire. There's nothing we can do to save them if the wildfire goes crazy. And so LA County doesn't want people building these little subdivisions and what have you in these cul-de-sacs that just, abut the foothills where the fires are going to start. So
that's why they don't fill the reservoirs or clear out the brush.
Yeah. So, you know, how much is the
nice
city?
Nice house you got there.
Yeah. How much is the city and
something happened to it?
Yeah. How much is the city and county going to be interested in allowing people to rebuild out there rather than to build somewhere else where the fire is risk is low?
In the very least, right? I mean, the tax base alone should be an incentive.
Yeah. I mean, look, this is going to, and here's the sad thing. This is going to drag on for 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody is going to figure out a path through this stuff because there's all of the county and state, especially the state environmental regulations or EPA regulations. They're going to have to do all of this clearing. So there has to be some sort of, you know, debris clearance plan that had,
I'm sure there's going to be a tax for.
And then you're going to have to go through the permitting process to rebuild your house. And whatever however closely your house might have hewed to the code in 1979 or 1989 or 1999 when it was originally built, I guarantee you that trying to do that again in 2025 is going to be a substantially more painful and lengthy process to get approval.
With much more expensive parts. I mean, the wood's more expensive, the brick's more expensive, the concrete's more expensive. You probably can't have gas. You're now looking at completely revolutionizing what it is you're going to live in. It's going to be smaller. It's going to be a lot less appealing.
You know,
hey, but you're in a good neighborhood.
Well, you know, here's the thing. You were in a good neighborhood. And that's one of the things I've been seeing, you know, some of the people who
are
living.
Do you see the shark?
Yeah. I do. But that's one of the things that I've been seeing from people that live in these neighborhoods. Hey, we want our community back. I'm pretty sure that that's never going to happen.
That's never going to
happen. That community, whatever it was, is gone. And I guarantee you that if somebody is in financial trouble and some angel developer comes in and says, hey, I'll pay you 1.5 for it, they're gonna sell properties, and what you're gonna end up with is condos there.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's gonna get split up. I mean, these acre and a half properties, even though there's plenty of that acreage that is on unbuildable scale. California is pretty crazy about what they'll allow to be built on the side of hills and whatever. And it's going to get split up into, you know, a couple of townhouses, or you buy up a few different properties and you build condos. you know, Vista View, View Vista. It's going to be, I mean, and you'd be kind of silly not to do that, to be honest.
Pacific Palisades Senior Living.
Right.
The Palisades Apartment Complex. I mean, all of that is, all of that is coming. And the
that
only
means the 7-Elevens are coming. And, the
And by the way, the only way I think probably to really rebuild those communities is now to build more roads and build them further up in the hills, which LA County is not going to want.
Yep.
And so
at least if you get up to the top of the hills, you have a little less chance of getting burned down.
But. Well, or you can see it coming for longer. Yeah. One of the two. But yeah, but you know, absent Chevron, you might be able to get some relief and put some more pressure on California. But I think even at that, that this is going to be a nightmare trying to rebuild that. I didn't really want to get us off into the fires. I don't. It just occurred to me that, you know, this Chevron doctrine thing. I think you're right. I don't think we realize how wide-ranging the amount of federal regulations are. I mean, you hear, you know, the Federal Register is like, what is it, 100,000 pages now?
Yeah.
And you just sort of blow that off. But the only reason the Federal Register is 100,000 pages is largely because the Chevron doctrine existed. And agencies felt perfectly free just to promulgate any regulation they wanted. If they can't do that anymore, and if we're not going to assume that the agency just automatically can just impose whatever regulations they want, there is a whole bunch of stuff in that 100,000 pages of the Federal Register that goes bye-bye.
Yeah, absolutely. And I expect that we're going to see it more when it comes to EPA stuff, especially with the way the EPA in the past couple decades has really overreached, especially with respect to waterways. So, like, I swear half the cases that the EPA has to deal with are because they declare some, you know, pond, which isn't really a pond.
Yeah, it's all wetlands cases.
Yeah. And it's like, well, we have a say over that and you can't do anything around it. It's like, what are you talking about? It's just, it rained.
Yeah, look, they have, they were embroiled in a case against some people that bought some house near a lake 20 years ago. And they have spent the last 20, in fact, it just got cleared up, I think, this past year. They've spent 20 years litigating against the federal government because they were building a house there and the FDA came out and said, seems kind of damp. You have a wetland. You can't build anything. And
yeah,
they shut it down, which, by the way, makes your land worthless.
That's exactly right. Matter of fact, that's the first thing when I represented developers. First thing we would look at, and this was especially true down in like North Carolina, Eastern North Carolina, where if you had any wetlands abutting your property, it automatically made it. You could have 15, 25, 1,000 acres. Having those wetlands abut the property or possibly splashing onto it, it just made the property unsaleable.
Yeah,
and that was because of EPA regulations.
Yeah, I mean, you can't even repave your driveway or, hell, you can hardly roof your house if the roof needs to be replaced because now of the hoops you have to jump through because, well, you're disturbing a wetland. And by the way, from chat, I read somewhere the feds acknowledged recently that the snail darter may not actually exist. Yeah, I think we may have mentioned it last week, but yeah.
Yeah, we talked about that last week.
Yeah, the feds are now saying, yeah, the snail darter, the thing that basically forced us
that we were protecting, that's why we're flushing all that water out into the ocean.
Yeah, to completely shut down California's ability to retain water. Yeah, that may not actually be an actual species of bird.
Yeah, that and the Delta smelt, which absolutely devastated the Central Valley. I mean, people don't realize that back in the 70s and 80s, the Central Valley of California was where all our lettuce, tomatoes, cucumbers, like literally all of our vegetables, that's where it came from.
And that area has, and that area has been beggared by the EPA.
Yeah.
The Delta smelt.
I'm Victor David Hansen talks about this. He lives there.
Yeah, he wrote a whole book about
this all the time.
Yeah, his family has been farming in the Central Valley of California for over a century, since the 1800s. And he wrote an entire book just cataloging how the Delta smelt and the snail darter basically killed the Central Valley. It's almost impossible to grow anything there now anymore.
Yeah.
And so
that's why we pay more for vegetables.
Yeah. So, you know, good luck, LA homeowners, with your rebuilding. You may have to say goodbye to LA if you really want to have an equally nice house when you recover. Speaking of saying goodbye, we're about to say goodbye to Joe Biden tomorrow morning, 9 o'clock my time.
Yay.
He will be gone noon your time, and I'm happy to see him go, as is apparently most of the electorate, who have decided that his approval rating, which has been dropping since March of 21, so his 60-day, he didn't even get a 100-day honeymoon, poor fella. Now at 37%. Compare and contrast with other presidents at the end of their presidencies. And other than George W. Bush, who was not a popular fellow when he left, Joe Biden now has the lowest popularity of any president, including Donald Trump.
Oh, I like that. Jimmy Biden. That's good.
Yeah, I was going to say, I scrolled down here. I saw Jimmy Carter and I started to say Jimmy Carter. And the reason I was going to say Jimmy Carter is because up until tomorrow morning, Jimmy Carter has always been the most ex of our ex presidents. And at 37% popularity, I think that Joe Biden is going to be remembered as the worst president of our lifetime.
I would have to agree. I don't see how he couldn't be. I mean, in our lifetime. So we're going back to JFK. Okay.
Well, JFK was assassinated before I was born, so
He was.
Yeah,
okay.
I can only go back to
using you as the reference.
No, I can only go back to Lyndon Johnson.
All right, so LBJ. Yeah, I Jimmy Carter was the worst. George Bush wasn't great, but he wasn't that horrible. I don't know why he left with such a. Well, he did screw up the whole.
Screwing up Iraq and Afghanistan.
Iraq and the recession of 2007-2008 totally screwed that up. We have to kill capitalism to save it. What?
Yeah. So, you know, and of course, George W. Bush is the one that got us into, well, at least one forever war and one very long war, which we, you know, did not win and became obvious certainly by 2005, 2006 that we could.
I seriously don't think any of that was his fault. I think that was our own handcuffing of ourselves. They were, I still believe to this day, I think they were the right wars to have. I think it was the right places to have those. Iran would have been better, but
Afghanistan, certainly. It's difficult
Afghanistan, certainly, yes.
It's difficult to see how we could not, how we could have alighted past 9/11 without trying to hold Afghanistan responsible.
Yeah, exactly.
On the
Although that was the forever war.
Yeah, that was the forever war. Iraq, I think, based on what we knew at the time, seemed like a good idea. Then it turns out most of what we knew is just wrong.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which,
yeah.
You know, made it in retrospect less necessary. But putting that aside, in both cases, it wasn't so much the initial military action that got us in. It was our inability to determine how we were going to get out.
Yeah. Yeah, there was no real end goal. That whole policy of regime change and bringing democracy to the Middle East, it was unworkable outside of a colonial system. The British could have done it. They did it in India. They did it in Hong Kong.
Yes, it
we were not capable.
It took the British 300 years to do that in India.
Yeah,
at least 200.
Not a, yeah, that's right. It's not. It's a long term commitment.
Yeah, it's you know, it's a marriage in many ways.
It's not just a puppy.
Yeah, exactly.
It's an actual lifetime.
Exactly right. It is a 15 to 20 year commitment every day. And America tends not to have the patience for those kind of commitments, nor should we be in the business.
We're not an empire, and we don't seek to be an empire. And, you know, despite what The Guardian may say, or The Groniad, as Ed Driscoll calls it, we're not, that's not the type of nation that we are. We've never sought to create an empire. Otherwise, we would have taken over Canada and Mexico a long time ago. I mean, talk about easy targets. But we don't do that. That's not our raison d'etre. And we don't have really any desire to do so. But we do want to be able to, you know, sell our goods wherever we think they should be sold and buy from wherever we think we can buy. And so we're going to keep those lines of commerce open, and we'll go to great risks to do so. And other people benefit. Okay, fine. I do kind of like the idea of, and this was Trump in his first term, of, you know, why aren't they paying us? Why are we risking all this? Why don't they pay us? Because we're the ones keeping it all open. We're the ones that are taking care of them. They spend every, you know, and you wrote about this. That was actually a really good article too. On, I guess it was on X, right?
Yeah.
About the whole NATO thing.
Yeah.
And is it time that we just end that? I've thought that for a very long time, especially because we're not helping Europe by being all their guns and letting them spend everything on butter.
Well, my argument is, and sorry, I'm a little bit distracted. We had somebody in chat who was just saying some pretty crazy stuff. So he's been removed from chat. So sorry about that, chat. Eric the Great, you know, get help, buddy. I don't know what your deal is, but you're gone.
My guess.
Yeah, my argument on NATO, and since you've brought it up, I wasn't going to, but you did, so I'll just bring it up. We'll just go to
It's a really good article.
And we'll just pull it up. It's called Not Too Late to Go. I published it on the 1st of January. My argument is that NATO is an artifact of the post-World War II international settlement. And it recognized basically the victors in World War II would be the ones who would be calling the shots in the post-war world, We created it in 1940.
Which included the Russians.
Yeah, and we created it in 1949 to oppose the Russians. The Russians then turned around and created the Warsaw Pact to oppose us. And it was a great security arrangement for the United States in 1949. But the entire post-World War II international settlement is breaking down. And Russia is no longer the primary adversary that we have to fear. I would argue that it is China, about which, by the way, more in due course. And we should be looking towards, well, our West, but what the world considers the East, in terms of America's security and what our security arrangements should be. The Europeans are not as rich as the United States, but they're rich enough to defend themselves and to fund their own militaries, and they don't need that dependency on us. And indeed, I would argue that that dependency on us automatically makes them less willing to fund their own militaries. We have, on the other hand, other fish to fry in 2025, and the Soviet Union no longer exists. The Warsaw Pact went out of business in 1991. Our strategic direction should be pointed towards the West, our West, the coast of California and points west from there. And China is the primary adversary. So our most important relationships are probably Japan and Australia, and despite the recent drama, South Korea and Thailand and those countries. And look, even Vietnam. I mean, Vietnam is not entirely unthreatened
Vietnam,
by China.
Vietnam, Taiwan, India. Yeah, no, there are plenty of strategic partners in Southeast Asia that we could draw upon.
Okay, look, India is tricky.
India is tricky, but they're at least amenable to American influence.
Yeah, they'll be amenable whenever the Indians get it into their heads that the Pakistanis aren't the biggest threat that they'll ever face. And
yeah, that's true.
And the trouble with those two countries in particular is there is no way that you can be nice to one of them without the other one taking it about as wrong as they could possibly take it. So any sort of rapprochement with India makes Pakistan go batshit, and vice versa. That is a zero-sum game trying to deal with those two countries. And
it really is.
Nobody
Pakistan became Pakistan, right?
Yeah, nobody's ever figured
it
out.
Split off from India.
Yeah, and they've had like three wars since then. Nobody has figured out how to make them live together. And then you throw Bangladesh in, and Pakistan is fairly certain that Bangladesh should still be part of Pakistan. Look, that's a swamp that I don't know.
Bangladesh is like a nothing place, though.
Yeah, that's true. That's a swamp that I don't know how you navigate through, because there's literally no way to make everybody happy there.
No, but India, we have a much better relationship with, both economically, strategically, and even
Now that Nehru and Indira Gandhi are gone, it's better, but it's not super great.
But it's still better than we have with Pakistan. Pakistan, we can't trust.
No, we can't. And well, here's the thing.
And they know we know that.
Yeah. But also, can we trust India? I mean, let's say that we make a deal with India for, you know, arms. Is there any possible way that we can be certain that if we gave India a fifth generation fighter, that 2 weeks later
they wouldn't use it on Pakistan?
They wouldn't be, you know, attacking Pakistan. But Asia.
Are you going to use this?
But look,
not attack your brother.
Yeah, but look, by the way, that is one of the primary concerns. We no longer live in a world where we're going to treat India and Pakistan as some sort of adjunct to our struggle with the Soviet Union and China.
Right.
And we need to come up with some sort of modus vivendi in the Far East that,
well, like you said,
serves
Japan,
American security.
Australia, South Korea, if they can ever get their shit back together. Even Taiwan. I wouldn't mind arming Taiwan. Vietnam, Philippines. I mean, we've got strategic partners there, and they all hate China. And they have good reason to. So, I mean,
I don't know that they hate China, but they certainly don't trust China.
They hate China. China has not treated them well ever. Even Vietnam.
Okay, Vietnam probably does hate China, but I don't know that India hates China.
Look, they do not like what China does up on its northern border.
No, they don't. That is true. But again, Pakistan is their, you know, is their primary. They're always going to see Pakistan as their primary opponent. I don't know how to talk them out of that. But I do know that in 2025, it's not NATO that's our important alliance. Our important alliances are in the Far East. And
I would absolutely agree. Europe should be able to stand on its own. NATO does really not serve any purpose anymore except to drain us of resources.
Yeah, well, my
and it's not like we're not going to be there for Europe. We don't need a treaty for that.
Yeah, my argument was that once the Soviet, well, look, there's a couple of arguments there. Number one, look, we don't like Vladimir Putin. He's not a good guy, but he is right about one thing. Secretary of State James Baker personally assured Boris Yeltsin that NATO would not move one inch eastward. And the Russians had the misfortune of believing us when we said it.
Yes, they did.
And we did it anyway. And there's, you know, I've seen a lot of revisionism that said, well, we never said that we wouldn't expand to the east. Yeah, we did. We have the memos.
That was the way that we got into the whole thing to begin with.
Yeah, the way that we got the Soviet Union to collapse on itself and the way we got the Warsaw Pact to fall apart was to say, yep, we're not going to extend NATO to the east. You don't have to worry about us. We're not going to threaten you. We did it anyway. And why did we do it? Once the Warsaw Pact came apart, that would have been the time for America to say, well, the reasons that underlie the creation of NATO no longer apply. There is no longer a Soviet Union. There is no longer a set of Eastern European satellite states that are tied directly to the orders of, you know, Joe Stalin. It's over. That era of history is done. It's time for the Europeans now to go back to securing their own defense, and it's time for the United States, who, after having spent for 50 years or 40 years, a substantial amount of blood and treasure, it's time for us to take care of ourselves a little bit and to let the Europeans take over. And I think if we had just said, look, we wouldn't have had to dissolve NATO. All we would have had to do is say, we're going to do like the French did under de Gaulle. We'll stick around and we'll advise and we'll give our opinions in NATO, but we are going to withdraw from the military alliance of NATO. De Gaulle did that in 1966. In fact, when I was stationed at Headquarters Allied Forces Central Europe, the French were there. They had a nice little office on the other side of the street from the main entrance to Headquarters Allied Forces Central Europe. So if we were interested in the French military's opinion on anything, we could ask them. But, you know, their attachment to that NATO base, well, there was no attachment. They had an office across the street. And they put in a French, well, they don't have brigadier generals, that put in a French major general and a little staff. And we would occasionally, you know, invite them over for tea, but they were not integrated into NATO militarily in any way. That would have been the perfect time in 1991, 1992 to do the same thing. And we didn't. That would have been the best time to do it. The second best time to do it.
But we like those bases in Frankfurt and Stuttgart and...
Yeah, well...
Well, where you were stations.
Again, that was the best time to do it. The second best time to do it would be now.
I absolutely agree. I find nothing but troublesome entanglements from NATO for the United States.
And look, they were worthwhile.
I don't think we're ever going to abandon Europe.
Yeah, but look, they were worthwhile entanglements in the 1950s, 60s,
absolutely,
70s,
yeah,
and 80s.
Absolutely. But with that, like you said, I mean, without the Soviet Union, the Russians have proven themselves to be pretty feckless. I'm not so worried about them. I think the Poles alone could probably repel them. Even the Finns. I mean,
well,
this is not Stalin's army.
Yeah. Well, look, even Stalin's army got its ass kicked by the Finns.
I mean, but that's the Russian way, right? Throw as much fodder as possible and then try to overwhelm you with bodies.
Yeah, it's like Peter Zeihan says, even for the wars Russia has won, they've been an endless succession of disaster, and they've won it simply by throwing people into a meat grinder and outlasting you. And so, you know,
it's a war of attrition.
Yeah, every Russian war has been a disaster. And they've had the population in the past be able to
They don't
accept those casualties. Yeah, well,
they're having to pay off debt for people in order to get them into the military now.
Yeah, well,
and again, now they're trying to recruit from Africa.
Russia's in a worse demographic collapse than China. That's why there are North Korean soldiers fighting in Ukraine now. The Russians can't do that. Plus, they've shot off all of their Cold War stockpiles of ammo. The Russians are... I would say it's amazing how much the Ukrainians have overperformed, except that every country that's ever gone to war with Russia has overperformed in fighting the Russians. So, you know, it's not that big of a deal. Let's segue. Let's talk about the other thing here. And this is, okay, I didn't understand what Biden was doing, but having listened to you, I think we can make an argument about, okay, what Biden was doing. Back in 2020, Donald Trump signed an executive order to ban TikTok. In fact, after the election, in one of those post-election videos that Donald Trump came out, he mentioned TikTok. In fact, he's talked about TikTok a lot.
He's been very back and forth on it.
Let's give Donald Trump a little listen.
When I wanted to disable TikTok 3 years ago, I was met with opposition from rhinos, Democrats, and everyone else. They actually went to court in an effort to stop me.
We're looking at TikTok. We may be banning TikTok. We may be doing some other things. There are a couple of options, but a lot of things are happening. So we'll see what happens. But we are looking at a lot of alternatives with respect to TikTok.
We gave them until September 15th. After that, they got a closed shop. Okay, that's TikTok.
They got a closed shop. Okay. And look, we can go back and we can see that Donald Trump has had quite a lot to say about TikTok, certainly back in 2020. So TikTok goes off the air yesterday. They got removed from the app. Well, I say they got removed from the app store. They didn't. They weren't supposed to be removed until today.
Right.
ByteDance pulled TikTok off of the app stores.
The American app stores.
Yeah, the American app stores. And so today, we get this. I'm asking companies not to let TikTok stay dark. I will issue an executive order on Monday to extend the period of time before the law's prohibitions take effect, yada, yada, yada. Americans deserve to see our exciting inauguration on Monday, as well as other events and conversations. Sure. Okay. I would like the United States to have a 50% ownership position in a joint venture. Wait, did we just decide that the United States government needs to own 50% of a social media company?
That's what it looks like.
And so not only is that a complete 180, it's also interesting to see people in, you know, Trump land who have gone from ban TikTok in a year ago to Trump is saving TikTok. Pay attention, Gen Z. Charlie Kirk, obviously. And TikTok themselves posted a deal today. I was very busy today in keeping bookmarks for the podcast. We are fortunate that President Trump has indicated he will work with us on a solution to reinstate TikTok once he takes office. Please stay tuned. Again,
well,
I feel like we're taking crazy pills. Oh, and by the way, I just want to throw this in here, and this is from up here on the sidebar. Can I open this particular? Maybe it's here. Okay. This isn't TikTok's Chinese overlords saying they'll sell in the next 90 days so the site can remain live. If that were the case, they'd have sold already. They think Trump is going to bend the knee and allow CCC or CCP ownership to remain. This is the first big test from China.
Yeah, I don't believe that. Trump is doing his normal wheeling and dealing. He's offering up something. Now, remember, he started going soft on TikTok, I guess, in 2023. When he realized he could utilize it as a way to get to people. He's somewhat of an anomalous case in that he can't get a straight deal from the regular media, so he has to use outside media. He found TikTok very effective, and so he doesn't want it to go away. However, he still recognizes that TikTok in America is completely different from TikTok almost anywhere else. It does need to change. It really should have some American control. I don't think the American government should be involved in that. I wouldn't want that. What if Elon or Peter Thiel or, you know, somebody like that were to buy it? I heard Kevin O'Leary was sniffing around. Okay.
Yeah, Kevin O'Leary apparently has a $2 billion tender he'd like to make to ByteDance.
Yeah, okay.
To buy it off him.
I mean, something that doesn't give the CCP direct access to our kids. Like, my kids aren't allowed. Well, my two older kids are adults, so they can do whatever the fuck they want. My daughter is not allowed on TikTok. And frankly, she's never really wanted to be on it. She kind of knew already that it was bad news. So I do think there is some utility in controlling access of the CCP to our youngins. And I do believe that that is a job that government should do.
Well, the Supreme Court agrees with you. On Friday, they came out and they said, look, this is not a First Amendment issue. This has nothing to do with anybody's speech. This is an act of Congress with a national security concern about Chinese Communist Party control over ByteDance, and that if they want TikTok to keep running, all they have to do, and if TikTok wants to keep operating, all they have to do is to sell themselves to someone who isn't ByteDance.
Right.
And look, a lot of people are coming back and saying the fact that that this has always been an option, and that they have decided not to sever their ties with ByteDance also speaks volumes about how important the Chi-Coms feel that they have some measure of control over TikTok.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and the biggest clue that you can get is how they limit TikTok in China, right, for their kids. They don't put any of the stuff that they put on American TikTok on China TikTok. And matter of fact, you're limited in China for how much time you can spend on TikTok per day.
Well, all of those things are great, but China also censors everything on TikTok. So, you know, there's a ton of content that nobody would even think twice if you put it on here that the Chinese would just ban right out of hand.
That's true.
I don't think we want to live in a country that does that, and I don't think having the U.S. government, and I don't think having the U.S. government own half of it moves us away from that.
Should not be involved in it at all.
Yeah, because boy, you want to talk about making editorial decisions when really, not going to like those decisions.
How's that any different than China doing it, right? I mean, our government's nicer. Okay, it's still government control. And that's never going to be a good idea.
No. But
however, I don't have a problem with the idea of forcing a sale so that Americans have some control over it.
Kevin O'Leary's Canadian.
There may be a lot of problems with that. There. Look, I have not explored all the unintended consequences of something like that, but my immediate reaction as a parent is I'm okay with that, as long as it's not the U.S. government that's buying it.
The problem is, though, and this is where it gets a lot more complicated, you know, we can all talk about how much fear we have of the Chi-Coms, and believe me, I have absolutely no sympathy for the Chi-Coms or their problems. And so we can talk about the fears of, well, what if they, you know, use it for propaganda purposes, which, you know, they might. What if they...
They might. They do. We know they do.
What if they gather information that we would prefer to be held private? You know, they might. But there is...
They do.
The thing is, there's no argument that you can make about TikTok that you can't make about Meta or Instagram or, you know, and Facebook or Threads or Blue Sky or, while we're on that topic, Twitter, X. I mean,
yeah, so that you're making the slippery slope argument. I am amenable to that, except I do think it's a much bigger difference having TikTok in control of the CCP, PLA, whatever you want to call it. I think that makes a big difference. I think that's a defining difference.
Well, I am curious because, by the way, this is not a... This is not a completely irrational argument. And I showed you Bonchi, who is over at Red State, his argument earlier. But Jeff Blahar kind of says the same thing on Twitter. China is turning the screws on Trump. I don't know how you could possibly know that. But They're betting he will fold on TikTok to the point where they're exerting public pressure. If and when he does, they will know they've mastered and own him. If Team MAGA wants this administration to succeed, they should start applying pressure now. Now, like you just said, you are not super amenable to that argument. I am probably more amenable to it than you are.
If non-amenable?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wait, because, what argument? That?
Well,
I thought I just said that the CCP, I don't want them having influence.
Right, but whenever I showed you the Bonchi post that basically said the same thing, that the Chinese were, you know, going to get away with this, that they were pressuring Trump.
You mean that they are going to Trump?
Well, what they're doing is they're putting pressure on Trump to keep ByteDance in control of.
Oh yeah. Okay, all right,
and that Trump, if he allows ByteDance to stay in charge, then basically what Trump is doing is just letting the Chi-Coms have a win here.
Right.
And that this is a test from China to see whether Trump will actually, at the end of the day, if they don't divest, if he'll actually shut TikTok down.
I think he would. I think he's made an opening offer, and then he's going to spruce up that offer with, okay, and then we get total control over anything that comes into America.
Yeah, and by the way, it's not just total control over anything that comes into America. It is also transferring all of the storage out of communist China and having run and managed from, well, at least not China. I don't know if it was run from France,
Minnesota,
or Great
Virginia,
Britain.
Who knows?
Well, but it may not be just the U.S. I mean, U.S. I mean, what if you know, the Brits bought it, or you know, someone in Germany bought it, or an Italian,
some place that we could at least trust.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that we would have the same level of distrust that we have for the Chinese, and so I think this is one of those cases now where, I mean, the man isn't even president yet. He won't be for another 15 hours. And I'm already looking.
It's Sunday, right?
Yeah. And I'm already looking to see, okay, are you going to back down from the Chinese? Look, if this is part of some sort of negotiation on behalf of, you know, whoever, you know, Kevin O'Leary, who, by the way, is Canadian, okay, great. That's fine. And if Kevin O'Leary...
He was. I think he's an American now.
Really? Okay. Well, he was a Canadian. But in any event... Okay, so let's say he buys it and he transfers control over to the United States. Heck, he could still live in Calgary for all I care, and he could exercise control from there. Okay, great. I think we're fine. If this ends up with... Okay, well, we'll take half of a share, and ByteDance can have the other half, and we'll keep the servers in China. Then I think
that's no good.
That's an absolute loss.
Right. Absolutely. I agree with you.
And here's the thing, when you'd said, you know, earlier Trump has been softening because, you know, Don Jr. said, hey, you ought to use TikTok and you can get to the young people. Yeah, sure. If the Chinese allow it.
Well,
that's the problem with that argument that, well, you know, this is great. You can get a hold of young people and we can use it for political purposes. And young people can see my wonderful inauguration. Sure. If the Chinese allow it. And if you're going to give the Chinese basically their finger on the kill switch at any time, which is what they currently have, if the Chinese ever decide that it's inconvenient to support you and becomes more convenient to oppose you, then TikTok will do everything they can to destroy you.
Absolutely agree. Yeah, that's a non-starter.
So I'm watching this carefully because I'm curious as to why we've gone from...
Do you think Trump would go that way? I don't think he would.
I don't know. What I do know is that ever since 2019, he says that TikTok needs to be banned, that it's a Chinese spy app. And now today, look, I saved TikTok, kids. So I'm curious and frankly,
you're
suspicious.
Flummoxed by his turnabout.
No, I'm not flummoxed. I'm suspicious.
Okay. You use your word. I'll use mine.
I mean, I am flummoxed because it's a complete about face from most of what he's been saying for the last 4 years. So no, I don't understand it.
I expected this, but I certainly fear the worst.
I
absolutely expected this. Once he found the utility in TikTok, I thought that he was going to try to save it somehow. But I think he's seasoned enough at this point politically to understand that he can't give them free rein. He can't let them, just gather info from Americans. As awful as Trump might be in a lot of ways, I really believe he looks out for Americans and he's very invested and looking out for Americans. And I don't think he would put us in a dangerous position like a lot of politicians would, like Joe Biden has done, just to get some sort of gain out of it. I don't see that about Trump. Is execrable as he may be on a personal sense, I do believe he really loves America. It's kind of the same thing as Reagan. I mean, Reagan, you just knew he loved America. Absolutely loved America.
Yeah. By the way, from chat, Michael, my sweet summer child.
Oh, this is going to be good.
Look, it is 6:13. So we are just about out the door. I did want to pass this on just as we start to say goodbye. And Donald Trump promises a harsh crackdown on Inauguration Eve. So tonight, he told thousands of roaring supporters he would impose severe limits on immigration his first day in office, vowing swiftly to fulfill the central promise of his presidential campaign, doing it today at the packed Washington Arena. He's starting at Capital One Arena today. He also repeated his pledge to launch the largest deportation effort in U.S. history, which would remove millions of immigrants. An operation on that scale, however, would likely take years and be hugely costly. Irrespective of what we might think about Trump and ByteDance and TikTok, this is the one thing, well, it's actually two things, but this is the one thing that he can do and do now, and this is the one thing that he must do now, which is fulfill.
And he was elected to do.
Yeah, this is one of the two things he was elected to do. Hey, I don't want eggs to cost $30 a dozen. And B, let's keep the heathen foreigners.
Get these fuckers out of here.
Those were the two things that he was elected to do. Even if he didn't want to do this, and all of the stuff that he talks about with the H-1B visas or that Vivek Ramaswamy,
That's side potatoes.
That is, yeah, that's all side potatoes.
Let's go for the meat. The real meat is getting these criminals out of our land.
And this is the he doesn't have a choice. This is one of the two things he has to do. Now the economy thing, people are going to give him some time. You can't turn that around, you know,
midstream. Especially with what he's looking at right now.
Yeah, but
the economy is not doing well.
Yeah, but the illegal.
There's all this latent inflation, and of course Biden's adding more at the end of his term, and we're going to see it. At least until the summer, it's going to keep going up.
Sure. It's probably going to take a 2 years to turn this thing around.
To get inflation under control, you either need to let it float. We can go the Volcker way, or you've got to bring down the spending big time.
Yeah, one of the two. And if you're not going to do the spending, then enjoy the 19% mortgage rates on 30-year mortgages.
But, and we survived that before.
Yeah, we survived it. And Jimmy Carter paid the price for it, too. But the immigration thing is...
almost.
Yeah, almost. certainly, 82 was an unpleasant election year for Ronald Reagan. But the immigration stuff he can do now. He can get a start on that now. Tom Homan can hit the ground running at ICE.
Oh, he's aching to do it too. You can just see it in his eyes. He's just like, when are you going to do this? Day one? What part did you not hear?
Oh yeah,
Stephanie.
And I saw an article yesterday about immigrants are already heading back towards Mexico to self-deport. And that's one of the things that I don't think people talk about enough. You know, one of the big criticisms of this deportation thing is, well, you just aren't going to be able to deport 11 million, assuming that that's
even. Why is it always 11 million?
Yeah, assuming that's even
11 million since like 2000.
Yeah, assuming that's an even remotely accurate number. You're not going to deport 11, 12 million. Well, A, not with that attitude. And B, how much of them are we actually going to have to deport?
Yeah.
Now, if you're willing to do
self-deport,
if you're willing to do the unpleasant thing, which employers will hate, and just have ICE agents show up at jobs and say, "Let's see everybody's papers," and start tossing employers in jail or heavily fining them for employing illegal workers, they won't be able to find jobs. You're going to have to cut all public benefits for anyone who is an illegal. Good luck with that. Several states, California, New York, are going to jump in and bitch and moan about all of that. But the more that you can do, the harder their life in America becomes, and the more willing they are to deport themselves. So I don't think the goal is deporting 11 million immigrants. The goal is to make immigration be so economically disadvantageous that they deport themselves.
Yeah, it's called flushing the field, right? If you're dove hunting, you have flushers out there, and they beat the ground and the weeds, and everybody flushes up. You know, that's kind of the tactic here, and it's effective.
One of the other tactics is to have a 20-year visa ban for anyone who gets caught.
I like that. That's fantastic.
So not only do you go, but we better not catch you back here for the next 20 years. And we're certainly not going to let you in willingly.
Yeah, and you shouldn't.
And by the way, you should.
You can still come in and try to claim asylum as long as you do it at a port of entry. And then you stay where they tell you to stay until you have your hearing. I mean,
And kill the CBP One app.
Yes, absolutely. That's a fucking ridiculous thing. Yeah. Well, yeah, we handled it. We reduced all these incoming migrants because you just made them sort of semi-legal.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you didn't reduce.
So now you don't call them illegal.
Exactly. You didn't reduce illegal immigration. You're just refusing to call it that.
Right.
Yeah, all of a sudden.
It was a nominative thing.
Yeah, all of a sudden these are refugees. Well, they're not here illegal. Right. They're refugees, poor things. Okay, well then why didn't they abide by international law and ask for asylum in the first nation outside of their home country?
Uh-huh.
Because that's how asylum is supposed to work. That's what the UN says. If you're heading up here from Panama or Guatemala or Venezuela, seems to me there were lots of places to stop along the way to do your declaration of being a refugee. But
Salvador is now like an absolute paradise. And I guarantee you that the El Salvadorans who are still here illegally aren't going back because they're criminals and they know they're going to get arrested and put in jail.
Yeah, that sounds like that'd be really tough for them.
Right.
And so we'll see. I just thought it was interesting that his last night before he becomes president, he's still promising on day one that he is going to do what he said he was going
to
do.
I expect him to do that. That's exactly why I voted for him. Because this shit needs to stop. It's a slow motion invasion.
Okay. Now, what's going to happen whenever he tries to deport these people and Venezuela, Mexico, Guatemala refuses to allow them to come back?
Well, you heard Tom Homan say it. We're sending them back. Anyway,
well, you know, strap a parachute.
You can
on
kick
them
out, but they're not coming back here.
Strap a parachute on them and you kick them out of the aircraft over the jungle. And that ripcord goes off. Then, well, once you hit the ground, you're on your own, buddy.
Hey, it's closing time. Yeah. You don't got to go home, but you don't get to stay here.
You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. And that, I think, is, well, it'll be, A, interesting to see that happen. B, interesting to see how many federal judges in Hawaii or New York or New Jersey say you can't deport anyone ever.
It's going to get really, I'm going to be super busy researching over the next 4 years.
Yeah, it's not going to go as swimmingly as everybody at Capital One Arena is pretending that it will tonight. In any event, Michael, always a pleasure. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next time.
All right, buddy. Love you.
Love you too, man. And for the rest of you, it's a pleasure talking to you as well. Thanks for joining us. We'll look forward to talking to you again next time, too. Until then, have a great week. So long.